this hour, waiting patiently from Blue Cross Veterinary Clinic in Aberdeen, which was founded in 1929, Dr. Michael Berge. You're the vet there now. You have been a vet for, what, 30 years?
30 plus. I graduated in 91. And, yes, I'm waiting patiently, but, you know, I'm a patient kind of guy, except when I get mad.
Right. Do you get mad? I could never picture you mad.
Well, okay. When I do get mad, which is on a regular basis,
yeah,
only about 10% of the time does anybody ever figure it out.
Oh, okay. Is that... That's probably a good thing, maybe?
I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. Okay. So if you have any pet questions, he is here to answer those questions at no charge.
That's correct.
Absolutely free.
And you know, I'm here to entertain you, but I can also give you free veterinary advice.
Okay.
And I have a lot of knowledge, and when I don't know the answer, I make it up.
So if it's wellness exams, dentistry, microchipping, fleas, you have something.
Right. You bet.
My dog has been itching a lot, the German Shepherd.
Oh, no, okay, now this is a real you and real dog?
Yeah, real me,
okay.
Real dog.
Well,
He's been itching a lot. Now, I've noticed the pit bull, she doesn't really itch all that much.
You know, a lot of what I do, in fact, the advertisement that I pay for on here is mm-hmm. has to do with getting people with itchy dogs and cats to come in. Because mm-hmm. There's a lot you can do for that.
Yeah.
And the first thing you do is check for fleas, mm-hmm. and then... the actual animal does need to come in person mm-hmm. because it could be just an allergy. It could be fleas, but other mm-hmm. times they have infections.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll even have weird autoimmune diseases and stuff.
Right, and skin conditions and stuff, yeah.
Well, every skin condition is a skin condition. So if your dog's skin is not comfortable, mm-hmm. it has a skin condition.
Okay.
But the question is it a skin condition that's easy to fix or is it hard to fix?
Mm.
But
what are you finding? Are they mostly easy, mostly hard?
Well, you know, before I was a veterinarian, I worked mm-hmm. for 3 years as a lab tech at the diagnostic lab in Corvallis, Oregon. And the boss there, who was also the director of the lab, my boss, had a quote. It was not his quote, but he liked to repeat it. He said, he was a dermatologist. I love being a dermatologist because... you can always make your patients feel better, but they never die, and they never get better. Okay,
right.
You know, you can never cure them, but you can always make them feel better,
right.
And they never die. So that's the glory of being a dermatologist,
okay.
which I'm not. I'm not a certified dermatologist,
yeah.
But I do a lot of skin cases.
An uncertified dermatologist?
Well, you know, it's a turf war thing.
You can't
call yourself board certified
right.
unless you've done a lot of extra work.
And paid a lot of money.
Yeah, you
right.
betcha.
Probably the latter comes first.
Right, but whatever it is, whether it's skin or anything else, there are a lot of people who never bothered to get a board certification, but actually are very appropriate for you to pay for them to solve your problems.
Hmm.
So if you're going like for a cardiology workup, in Olympia or Seattle or something, and the person who's working on your case is not a board-certified cardiologist, it really doesn't matter. You know, mm-hmm. if they know what they're doing,
right.
they'll be fine. Just like a lot of nurses are perfectly good doctors, they're mm-hmm. just not allowed to put MD after their name.
Hmm. Do you take that pet insurance... Is that for, like, medical stuff, or is that something else?
There's the insurance companies for humans and certain startups. Anyway, pet insurance is a rising thing in veterinary medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't like it. There's a lot of ripoff going on.
Yeah?
So what it is it used to be that veterinary medicine would try to give you a good value. Mm-hmm. And now and then patients died, but then we've been trying to be just like human medicine, and now mm-hmm. we've succeeded too
with
much.
Pet insurance.
So therefore, the veterinary cases many times, if you have problems with your pet, you can end up with a bill of $10,000, $20,000.
Right.
Well, with that type of money, you need insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So the insurance companies have come in to fill in that void. But when they pay Joe $20,000, you're not Joe. You're the one who's giving the monthly fees to support that insurance company so that they can give your money to Joe. you know.
Is Joe the vet?
No, Joe's just a random person who got a bill for $20,000.
Oh, okay.
And now the insurance company has to pay for it, mm-hmm. but they need to have thousands of people like you paying a monthly fee,
mm-hmm.
but that money is not actually benefiting you. This is insurance in general. The money is not necessarily, unless you're Joe who got the bill for $20,000, you end up subsidizing somebody else's problems.
So you do take it or you don't take it?
Oh, yeah, it's not really a matter of taking it or not taking it.
Because I know, like, if you go to a doctor, you know, some insurances they'll take.
Right. You see, you can buy insurance no matter what. Even mm-hmm. if you've got a cranky person like me who's not interested, you can still buy insurance.
Yeah.
But you need to do the paperwork directly with your insurance company.
Right. Oh, okay.
So then whenever you go to Blue Cross Vet, you'll get a bill from us, which you then pay. Mm-hmm. We don't directly bill the insurance.
Okay.
And then you contact your insurance company and mm-hmm. send them the invoice, mm-hmm. and then they pay
you back.
Correct.
Right. Just not everybody has, you know, 10 grand
but
for
the bigger
a surgery
clinic,
laying around,
the bigger
right?
clinics, the ones that are creating those $20,000 bills, mm-hmm. they will do direct billing.
Huh.
Because the insurance is their bread and butter.
Right. Blue Cross Veterinary Clinic in Aberdeen, Blue Cross Veterinary Clinic Law.com. You want to get more information, like humane euthanasia, it happens.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
It has to all the time.
We've had to put down a couple different pooches because they get to that point.
Yeah, and it's actually one of the most important things a veterinarian does.
Yeah.
And it can be hard.
It is. Yeah, it is.
It's hard for everybody,
yeah.
including the pet.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm that's
got to be hard on you too.
Yeah. It's actually the easiest on the pet because you come in and the veterinarian gives you a sedative shot and then you fall asleep and then the game is over. There's more to be done after the pet falls asleep, but they're not aware of it. So the euthanasia project, a lot of it has to do with talking with the owner during sometimes months about whether it's the right decision and when is the right time.
Right. So if you have any questions, call us, 360-533-5259. It's Local Matters. You're on the air.
Good morning. How am I on speaker? Does that sound okay?
Most of the time.
Okay. So I have a short story and a pet question. I was getting a stent a few years ago. I'll turn this off. I was getting a stent a few years ago in my heart area, and there was three people in the room and two guys and a lady. And the guys asked the lady how her cat was doing, and she said, no, of course, I can't see any of this. I can only hear everything. And she says, I just took out a loan for 12 grand. And they start doing that under your breath snickering that you don't want that lady to hear while they're putting my stent in.
Yeah, okay. And then you're thinking
to yourself, I was actually
is this person's hands, are their hands as steady as they really ought to be at this time?
No, not while they were laughing. But anyway, it all worked out. I'm still here. But anyway, right. So my pet question, Dr. Berge, my goldfish is almost 7 inches long.
Okay.
The 59-cent, $350
goldfish. You've got a 7-inch? Never mind. Oh, okay.
He's big. And he's in a 20-gallon tank, which means he needs a new tank.
Okay.
And I'm gonna keep the thing until I go. Anyway, but my question is, breadcrumbs, or should I just use regular fry mix when I get tired of them? I'm just kidding. I'm not going to eat my fish. You guys have a great day.
I thought you were asking what to feed the fish.
Yeah, and
I
was like,
yeah, you could probably feed them breadcrumbs, but I would prefer a commercial diet that probably has a higher protein level. And then, so you're talking about euthanasia for the goldfish, about whether it could be fried afterwards. I right. believe goldfish, being carp, have a lot of bones that are kind of annoying. That's why they made gefilte fish, which is made out of carp. You process it to take the bones away, and then when you finally eat it, it's bone-free.
Have you had people bring in fish, like goldfish?
To be put to sleep?
Just to be treated?
No, they'll ask sometimes. But even though I'm a marine biologist, I've found that when it comes to doing weird cases, I can't really provide good value. So
right.
I pretend I'm dumb on that.
You pretend.
You know, I'm perfectly happy to chat about it over the air and stuff like that, but I don't always feel comfortable charging $55 to talk about something and say, oh, by the way, you know, he's doomed.
Right.
I want to give value for my money.
Is it one of those cases like we've talked before where if you're bringing in your hamster or, excuse me, your fish because it doesn't look good, it's pretty much because it's on its way out.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, for instance, when I was that lab tech at the diagnostic lab, I was the assistant for pathologists and so forth. And one of the pathologists I really liked was the bird specialist. And she would go out to many different bird places. And how do you determine whether the birds are healthy? Well, you grab a bunch of them and kill them and then take them apart, because that's what pathologists do.
Oh.
So it's kind of a herd health thing. So, yes, if you're losing one fish, it's quite likely that somebody with the proper training can look at that dead fish and tell you how to save the ones that are still alive.
Oh.
So that's very appropriate.
All right. Do you still know your marine biology, like seals and sea lions kind of education stuff? Or
yep.
Do you forget that?
Well, the short answer is yes, I remember it.
Yeah.
And when it comes to questions about all that stuff, I can talk and talk and talk.
Okay. Well, I hear down at the docks in Westport, they got a sea lion problem.
Yes. And I think we were talking about it one of our other visits. You know, the troubles with sea lions is that they're predators, and, you know, if they never approach humans because they always get shot, well, that's fine. But when you start to protect them, they lose their fear.
Right.
And so if they're hanging out at the docks,
they're eating dogs.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because they're a predator. You know, mm-hmm. in the wild, they'll eat baby seals and things. So it's not like a dog is that different.
They'll probably eat babies.
Yeah, if it was a little one.
Yeah. So watch your little toddlers. Don't let them wander off to pet the cute little sea lion.
Well, you know, if it was a 600, well, particularly a Steller sea lion, which can be well over 400 pounds, what we are typically seeing are male California sea lions. They come up here during the summertime, and they're much bigger than the female California sea lions,
mm-hmm.
but much smaller than the Alaska sea lion, which is called the Steller sea lion. We hardly ever see those here.
Okay.
But those are monsters.
Yeah.
Anyway, anything big can eat something small. And
right.
So you have to be aware of that.
And they're eating all the bait from the bait tanks and eating all the fish around there, but I understand that they're more of a problem in the fishing industry than the fishing industry.
Well, I'm okay.
Wait, we can move on.
No, that's all right. No, perfect. Okay, I'm going to sidestep just a little bit and talk about, say, for instance, if you have an endangered species, a cute little bird that is endangered in most of its range, but in the wintertime it goes and hangs out and poops on the courthouse. And, you know, all the birds in the world are right here in this one little town, and the people in that town think, wow, there's so many of these birds, let's just get rid of them. But actually, by killing all those little birds that have to be in that one space at that one time, you can be doing a lot of damage to their whole population. So the sea lions are kind of like that. They're not that... Okay, California sea lions are doing sort of okay, but you do need to be aware that at certain times there can be concentrations of certain animals that can be a real pain.
Yeah.
And it's totally appropriate to deal with them. But just killing them all is maybe not the right way.
Well, not all of them.
Just the ones that come close. Yeah, I do believe that when it comes to California sea lions, that sometimes it is appropriate to shoot some of them in the same way that we would shoot a cougar or a bear that's giving trouble.
Right.
You know, that I don't think that's, you know, that's the way I believe.
Anybody bring in a cougar?
I've never dealt with a live cougar, but yeah. I did, once again, when I was at lab tech, I did take the brain out of a dead cougar for rabies testing.
Did it have rabies?
No. Oh. It was just a poor cougar in the wrong place at the wrong time.
I saw one morning on the drive to work.
Yeah.
And it was through the windy hill, you know, from 109 over to Hoquiam. And it was dark and foggy, and had I not been paying attention, and, you know, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, who's paying attention anyway, right?
So you might have hit it, but...
Well, it was far enough away that I wouldn't have hit it, but, I mean, had I not been, like, really paying attention to the road, and I wouldn't have seen it.
Okay, yeah.
Just because
it was so sleek,
the way it just flowed across the road, and it was so quick, but it wasn't, like, running. It was, like, sneaking.
Right.
It was amazing.
Yeah, I saw a cougar once when I was walking our dogs. And we'd rounded a corner, and my wife and I had not been talking at that moment. We never would have seen the cougar if we'd been making noise. Mm-hmm. But we were silent, and we rounded over. And way down on the next stretch of the road, there was this really weird-looking deer with really short legs. Mm-hmm. It looked just like a deer. It registered in my brain as a deer. Mm-hmm. And I said, this is not just something really different about this deer. And mm-hmm. that's because it's a cougar. And it looked at us and ran away, and that was the end of that interaction.
I saw a deer on my way to work this morning. Yeah. It was in near Hoquiam High School.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of hanging out. We used to get this family of deer, like this generational family of deer, right here in the parking lot
of the
radio station here.
Cool.
And because there used to be this little grassy strip and a bush that they used to just rest there really early in the morning. And now they don't come because there's a big parking lot there.
Yeah. You know, and the population does keep rising over time.
Mm-hmm.
But at Central Park, which is also the population in Central Park, that's where I live.
And isn't that where the clinic is, too?
Yeah, and I'll see animals there. You know, just 3 or 4 days ago, I saw a deer, a doe, that was grazing in my neighbor's lawn.
A deer? A female deer?
Yes. We won't go down that any further. Point made. Okay, anyway, a deer.
I was just going with the song.
Right, yeah. I think a doe. You know, if it was a male, we would be seeing nubs of antlers by now.
Right.
Anyway, grazing in the lawn, looked at me. I looked at her, and then she put her head down, continued grazing. You know, she didn't care.
Right. How about those Ocean Shores deer? They've got quite the reputation.
Being a
friendly deer.
Oh,
they'll come up right up to you. Hey, got any food?
I can believe that. I know deer have been in Ocean Shores all along and pretty bold. Yeah. I had heard things that like they were having some skin problems. Did they get that under control?
I don't know. I just know that you're not supposed to feed the deer, but people are feeding the deer because, you know, I mean, who wouldn't want to feed a deer because it's kind of cool. And
you know, and all the professional wildlife biologists say don't feed anything. It's always bad.
Yeah.
You know, there's a saying you'll see, you know, a fed critter is a dead critter.
Yeah.
Which I think is perhaps a little overreaction on that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you feed them, whether it's a little chipmunk on the top of the mountain pass or whatever, you are creating a dependency that can cause harm to that animal later.
Wow. That sounds so familiar. Where I heard that before. Dr. Michael Berge of Blue Cross Vet. He is here in the studio taking any questions you may have about your fine furry friend, whether that's a dog or a cat, because that's like your specialty, yeah? Dogs, cats?
Yeah, I pretty much stick to the dogs and cats. Even though I have a lot of wildlife training, I know too much.
Yeah.
So I try not to charge money for fixing wildlife and also fish because I feel like can't really do that good of a job.
Right.
But that doesn't mean I won't chat about it. And sometimes people will bring in, will just pay a consultation fee and then I'll chat. And I think I can give good value for that.
Yeah.
Or if a case is really weird, you know, say for instance, you've already been to another veterinarian and you're a little confused, come in. You know, I'd like to have the pet with me if I can, but even if we can't, just a consultation, bring me all that briefcase full of paperwork and I'll look it over and say, this means this and that means that. And now what do we do next?
You offer second opinions.
Yeah. Every professional offers a second opinion.
Yeah.
And you don't have to ask for it. You just go, you know, that I'm here for a second opinion.
Okay. Are there things like, you know, because we're being regulated more and more, so there's certain things that you can and can't do and things that you can and can't say when it comes to veterinary?
Yeah. Now, one thing you do need to be aware of, the state of Washington considers itself to be a highly advanced civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways that they demonstrate this high advancement is to bully the crap out of professionals, you know, make them behave in certain ways. So the Department of Public Health for the state of Washington is in charge of mostly human medicine, but it's also kind of has the stepchild of veterinary medicine. And they have a dedicated prosecuting department just to humbug physicians and veterinarians if there's any even the breath of a case of malpractice. They're dedicated, salaried professional prosecutors right. will go and rattle their cage to see if they can find something that's gone wrong.
Right.
And if my voice sounds...
Witch hunting.
Yes. Okay, yes. Now, if you're listening, you can hear that my voice is agitated.
Yeah.
And that's because I'm agitated, because mm-hmm. I feel this is very unfair. It is absolutely witch hunting.
Yeah.
Now, and so every professional, veterinarian and physician, feels the Inquisition breathing down their neck. Mm-hmm. And they will charge you unnecessary fees, not because they feel they're necessary, but because they can protect themselves against sudden attacks by those prosecuting people. Okay, you know, your patient died, human or
a pet.
Or a pet.
Yeah.
Is there any test that you missed? You know, the money is no object. Is there anything you could have done that could have maybe mitigated this one?
Right.
Even if it only happens 1 out of 10,000 times, if you didn't do that test, you did
that's
malpractice.
That's you.
So everybody is very paranoid, and we do that has created a massive increase in the cost of veterinary medicine and human medicine.
Wow.
To protect the physicians and the veterinarians.
Well, they call it practicing medicine. Practicing medicine. Right?
Well, yeah, you know, they're all jokes about I'll keep practicing until I get it right. Absolutely. But what it has done is there are many, many cases that I did and that other veterinarians and physicians have done in the past that they refuse to do now because it has too high of a risk. No, go to the big hospital. You know, they have all the fancy things. And let them take care of it.
It's Local Matters. You're on the air.
Good morning, Johnny. Good morning, Dr. Berge.
Hi.
So I know that this doesn't apply quite as much, although there is pet insurance for pet owners. But doesn't that kind of put the physician, whether veterinary or human, in a bind between the insurance companies who don't want to pay for any extra unnecessary tests or tests that they feel aren't necessary, and the physician is trying to basically cover themselves and make sure that, well, this particular thing might possibly be related to this, so I want to get them tested, but the insurance company comes back and says, oh, no, that's not a high enough likelihood, so we're not going to cover that or that procedure. I mean, doesn't that kind of put you guys in a horrible position between those two opposing forces?
Yes, and now the human medicine is just absolutely bizarre. You know, the battle between the insurance companies and the hospitals and so forth. And
I know. I've had to pay for a number of tests out of pocket because our insurance company would not pay for them, but actually turned out to be what we needed.
Yeah. And that's kind of different from what I was talking about a minute ago. If a veterinarian or a physician recommends a test and the owner will not or cannot pay for it, that actually did protect the physician or the veterinarian from malpractice. They write in the record, I recommended such a test, owner declines or patient declines. Mm-hmm. So that they are totally off the hook at that moment. But what if that test really was needed is what you're talking about right now. Yeah. And, you know, insurance companies are not physicians. They're representatives of a corporation that's trying to make money by not paying insurance. They collect insurance. See, the way you make money as an insurance company is to collect premiums but not pay. And the more you can not pay, the more profitable your company is.
And that's true with the you know, the pet owner's insurance too.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the way insurance works.
Would that
okay, well, that was just a question that I had. So.
Okay, now, did I actually answer your question?
He's gone.
Okay.
Now, would that test or many of the tests not be as expensive if we didn't have that kind of overreach, oversight, extra?
I think the tests actually are fair price.
Are they? Okay.
You know, pretty much everything, every CAT scan and blood profile is a fair price.
Mm-hmm.
And the insurance companies are kind of keeping those people under control. You know, all these test people are... They're doing their best. You know, I have no beef against all the different test people. But the question is who gets to pay for it gets kind of weird.
Ah, okay. I got an email. My cat will groom herself in spots until there's no hair left, and sometimes it will bleed and get infected. She does this every couple of months, and has maybe two spots that she will do this in. Any ideas what this could be caused from and how to stop her from doing this?
Yeah, I get hundreds and hundreds of cats like that. They need to come in. Mm-hmm. The first thing I do is make sure that they're absolutely, totally flea-free.
Mm-hmm.
And then use some of the new high-tech projects like Bravecto to make sure you get that. But a lot of cats will still be itchy. And then I typically will give allergy management, often steroids.
Yeah. So if they're allergic, it's a matter of finding out what they're allergic to?
Well, that is one way of addressing it. I've always found it kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
But in theory, you can give allergy injections and so forth and get them solved that way.
I mean, could they be allergic to the food that we're giving them or the detergent that we're using in our laundry that they sleep on our bed?
Absolutely. The detergents and the perfumes and things. That's
for breezing my whole house so it doesn't smell like kitty litter box.
Right. No, that's the hard on you and on the cat.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the food allergies, I think that is underrated. But what's overrated is the food allergy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I complain about corporations, and the way to sell food is to convince people that if you buy my food, that your animal skin will be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Because if 100% of skin allergies are caused by food, this is not true. But this is the thing that's promoted.
Right.
So I have my clients.
The
rhetoric. I have my clients are always talking about my pet skin is messed up, and I've tried this food, what food do I need to fix my cat? And my answer is, well, maybe it's not the food.
Right.
Maybe it's something else.
Okay. Well, you hear things like, grain-free and corn-free.
This is all just marketing.
So cats can eat that and dogs can eat that and be fine?
There's no secret to making good food. But one of the troubles with making good food is that you need to pay for good ingredients.
Right.
You can't make good food out of crappy ingredients.
Right.
That's a technical term, inferior ingredients.
What kind of food do you recommend for dogs and cats?
Well, usually I tell people, just get something expensive, and that usually works pretty well.
Really?
Yeah, actually. But then that's kind of gone to backfire on me a little bit. Because people, the companies that make food have discovered that there's no limit to how much people will pay if they're convinced that the food is worth it.
Oh, because so it's their buddy, their little...
Yeah, $100 a bag for fancy food.
And yeah. My dog is worth it.
Yeah, I wasn't really thinking $100.
Part of the family. Sorry.
Well, that's the other thing, the guilt thing. You need to prove that you love your pet by giving me lots of money.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
And whether me is a veterinarian or a corporation doesn't really matter. Just get the money.
Right. And that will prove how much you love your pet.
Absolutely.
Okay. How can we really just love our pets, in your opinion, as a vet?
I think the love sort of comes automatically.
Yeah.
And then you just need to make a decision. Of course, you need to give them what they need.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you need a second opinion about what that is.
Ah, right. Okay. We're talking about our pets with Dr. Berge, Blue Cross Vet. BlueCrossVetClinicWA.com.
Okay, yeah.
I think I have it memorized now. You should have it memorized.
Well, more or less, but I never actually chose that name. It was part of a package.
Yeah.
But once you put your investment into a website with a particular name, then you never change it after that.
Right. So if you have any pet problems, you can call us at 360-533-5259. You can email or text message. If you don't want to get brave and go one-on-one with the doctor on the live radio.
Yes. Yeah, I know it's scary. It was scary for me to even talk on the radio, but I got over it.
Yeah, you can host your own show.
Yeah. But, because I kind of visualize me here is to maybe provide a little veterinary advice, but otherwise just entertain you. You're probably on the freeway right now going from point A to point B.
Right. So... off the air, we talked a little bit about like mental health in the veterinary world.
Right, it's pretty bad.
Is it?
Yeah, because people become veterinarians because they wanted to do good,
mm-hmm.
And then you get out there and you find that you're not allowed to do good in many times.
How come?
For money.
You're not allowed?
You want to do something, and the owners cannot afford it.
And so then the
animal dies because of lack of money.
Right. Do some people expect you to, do things for free?
Yeah, and that also is hard for your mental health because you can't really afford to do
You've
that.
You've got bills to pay.
Yeah. You know, and whenever I hire somebody, whether, you know, a gardener or a lawyer or whatever, I may be able to afford their money or I may not, but I never feel that they didn't earn their money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone who does things for you is earning their money.
Right.
But sometimes you don't have the money to pay them.
Yeah, that happens too. A lot nowadays, it seems.
Yeah.
So, the suicide rate amongst veterinarians, didn't you say something like that was higher than normal?
Yeah, all forms
Not
of
that it's normal, but
all forms of mental health for veterinarians and veterinary technicians are just really bad, but particularly for the veterinarians.
Yeah.
And then any, of course, suicide is one form of manifestation of bad health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can hide everything until suddenly one of your colleagues is dead by suicide. And you say, that person was not very happy.
Right.
And it's because of structural nature of the business. It forces you to do things that kind of can be really hard.
Wow. Hmm. What can we do to help? Can we do anything to help?
As a pet owner, there's really nothing you can do. Okay, yes, there is something you can do.
Yeah.
You can be really nice.
Yeah? Be nice to your vet?
Yeah, be nice to your vet.
Okay.
We appreciate it.
Do you get some that aren't?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Look, people can be horrible. It doesn't matter whether it's veterinary medicine, but if, you know, whatever you do, you can tell stories about how you've been badly treated.
Mm-hmm. I could you're just always such a pleasant person. I just don't see how somebody could be not pleasant back.
Well, I am a very good at public relations.
Yeah.
And I can defuse a lot of situations. You know, it's a skill.
Yeah.
You know, I have a natural aptitude. When I was a little kid, I would wander around and people thought I was so cute and stuff like that. And now as a grown up,
oh, he's so cute.
Right. So yeah, I can soothe things, but sometimes there are situations that just cannot be soothed.
Is it mostly with, you know, the pet owner who has a dying pet and there's nothing you can really do for them?
Well, usually it's kind of just a mismatch between expectations and what we can deliver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very, very normal for somebody to come in with a certain expectation and then you explain that they had it wrong and they're not mad at you at all. That's why they came for us, to get the advice.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes people come in with a real kind of a bit in their teeth and they think they already have a diagnosis and they just want you to perform in a certain way.
Because they're the vet.
Yeah. And those people are a little harder to deal with.
Okay.
But really the way every veterinarian deals with that is if they're just too cranky, you just tell them to take a hike.
Yeah. You ever get that? Well, I googled my dog's symptoms, and Google said it was this.
Well,
so it's this.
I guarantee that every veterinarian, even I remember, I keep saying I'm the low tech veterinarian. Others are the fancy veterinarians. All of us, including the fancy veterinarians, don't like that.
Yeah. I know doctors don't like that either.
Yeah.
They're like, don't Google your symptoms.
Right. And if you do, don't tell me about it.
Right. Right. But we still do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, we're running out of time. If you have any questions.
There's probably time for one quick question if somebody's waiting on that. Otherwise, I will just continue to talk.
Okay. What do you want to talk about?
Okay. Let's see. I discovered this has nothing to do with veterinary medicine.
Yeah.
I discovered that they have a radioactive volcano on the back of the moon.
Really?
Yeah, it has thorium emissions and produces gamma rays.
Wow.
Yeah, not very active. It's 3.4 billion years old.
Wow.
But
the moon's that old?
Yeah, yeah. And one thing about the moon is that it hasn't had a lot of weathering with water and stuff like that. So things that can be very old on the surface, you can still see them. Whereas on Earth, all the surfaces have been kind of re-sculpted many, many times.
I wonder what the flat earthers think of that whole moon having a volcano on the other side.
You know, I don't even think about the flat earthers anymore. I think about another group that's kind of just as misguided, the ones who believe that the 2020 election was stolen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people have certain ideas, you know, and they'll kind of maintain them.
Right.
But whatever aberration you can think of, there's some people who will kind of profess it, and half of them are doing it just for fun.
Yes, we are. Well, we got about 4 minutes. If you have any pet questions, coyotes.
Oh, okay.
You know much about coyotes? We have a lot of coyotes around.
I wrote a book about coyotes.
Did you?
But it's a novel. I wrote a book. You can buy it if you want on Amazon. You would just check New Coyote 2.0.
Okay.
And if you just enter New Coyote, you'll get the older version of my book. But if you want the newest version, you just say New Coyote space 2.0. And okay. it's a novel about a talking coyote hanging out right here in Grace Harbor, causing trouble. Mm-hmm. And the reason he talks is because he's actually the coyote trickster spirit, a magical coyote.
Okay.
And he was raised here by hippies because he wanted to learn how to just do things the white man's way.
Those hippies. Yeah. I blame the hippies.
Right. And, of course, a coyote would be a bad influence no matter where he ends up being. And he is.
What motivated you to do that, like a coyote? Did it just come pouring in one day?
Well, originally I wanted to write an animal story, and it was originally kind of going to be more of a werewolf story, but it kind of very quickly morphed into a coyote story.
And it
just kind of grew. You know, novels in general, short stories and long stories, you have an idea and you just start to write it down and then just kind of let the idea grow. You don't have to just put it all in your head.
Mm-hmm.
You should kind of work on it a little bit at a time. And even if you think you don't have writing skill, you should do it anyways, because it's the writing action that actually teaches you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and like for my novel, I did it all longhand at first, and later on my typing skills got better, and I do typing, you know, on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
But at first, I just wrote it down on paper.
Did you fine-tune it after you wrote it down?
Oh, yeah. It's a working project. You put things down and then say, well, that's wrong, but this part is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I would actually use scissors and scotch tape and cut things apart to save writing.
Right.
But when it's really messy, then maybe you need to write it over again and keep working on it.
How about your webcomic?
Oh, yeah. I also wrote a webcomic. So I published those two novels, New Coyote and Coyote Season, where he's captured by the CIA and ends up ends up in Iraq trying to stop the first Iraq war in 1991, but fails. Yeah. The war happens anyways.
Right.
So those are my novels, but now I put most of my energy into an online webcomic called Ship's Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a magical fox on an alternate world that's called Avalon. This alternate world with magic and so forth has connections with Earth. Mm-hmm. So the characters, although none of them except very wealthy ones could ever possibly visit Earth, they'll talk about Earth lore from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
So in any movie or story that was really popular, you might see references to it on this other world, because they know where Earth is. They know that their ancestors came from Earth.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't go back.
Do they think it's like a loony bin, a lunatic asylum?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Good stuff. Dr. Berge, Blue Cross Vet, thanks for spending time with me.
You bet. Glad to be here.
We'll see you next month. And if you'd like to reach out to Blue Cross Vet or get more information, it's bluecrossveterinaryclinicwa.com.